of Ryan Peeler. And if I could reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. Mr. Peeler is both entitled to a new trial because the court refused to instruct the jury on a lesser offense, and to dismissal due to the state's failure to bring him to trial within the required time. We just address first the more straightforward issue of the instruction on the inferior degree defense of fourth-degree assault. He was charged with one count of second-degree assault, which involves an intentional assault, recklessly causing substantial bodily harm. Viewed in the evidence, light in the light most favorable to Mr. Peeler,
it might be helpful if you start with the speedy trial issue.
Sure.
Would you agree that's dispositive?
It is dispositive, and I was just going to touch on the first one first, but I'm happy to move on because we don't need to address that first issue at all. Because of this second issue, which is the state's failure to bring Mr. Peeler to trial while he was serving a term of imprisonment, the operative language of the statute, RCW 998-010, and just the first language, the first phrase says, whenever a person has entered upon a term of imprisonment in a penal or correctional institution of the state, and whenever during the continuance of that term of imprisonment there is pending in the state an untried charge and a proper request is made, that person shall be brought to trial within 120 days of when the prosecution receives that request. In this case, Mr. Peeler had entered upon a term of imprisonment in a penal or correctional institution of the state. He was sentenced in Snohomish County September of 2011 and taken to the Department of Corrections custody.
There is a proviso, and that is a continuance for good cause.
Yes.
Is there anything in the record that suggests the state invoked or requested a continuance at any time?
The state did not request a continuance under the provisions of this statute during the period of time that is in question here.
Is that a problem?
Essentially, yes, had the state requested a continuance, they certainly could have said to the court, the statute contemplates the state needing additional time. He was arraigned in February of 2012. He was arraigned close to the end, but within the time, yes. Yes. They could have requested a continuance and never did so, yes.
And they set the trial date outside the 120-day.
Yes, the trial date was set at the February arraignment in April, which would be outside the 120 days. So certainly at that point in time, they had Mr. Peeler in court in person with an attorney, and the court having jurisdiction was present, and they could have explained a necessary reasonable basis for a continuance. The statute clearly gives the state the opportunity to make that request, and the state did not comply with that. Criminal Court Rule 3.3 also would exclude from speedy trial any time being prosecuted on unrelated charge. There are certainly available legal avenues for the state to pursue that they did not try to pursue in any way.
So you're saying that criminal rule would toll the 120-day period? So the days he was actually in King County on hold would be excluded from the 120-day period?
Well, the criminal court rule is a separate speedy trial provision. This would supersede that. This statute deprives the court of jurisdiction over the case under these circumstances when a person's in prison.
Correct. My question, though, goes to whether the 120 days actually is running while he's, for instance, in this case, in custody in King County being prosecuted on another charge.
Yes. It is running.
If King County hadn't concluded its prosecution until 180 days after the notice, Skagit out of luck?
Under this statute, it would be, unless it had taken some measure to bring Mr. Peeler in. They certainly could place a detainer. They could do another order of transport. They could bring Mr. Peeler in to Skagit County to institute the prosecution or to explain the good cause shown. The speedy trial time would be told, but this is a separate statute that operates independently of that.
I understand, but I'm asking if this 120-day statute would be told as well in Europe.
The statute has no tolling provision in it. The only provision for delaying the 120 days is this good cause request that the prosecutor may make to the court.
But you're clear that if he hadn't been arraigned, there's no provision for a continuance? The court wouldn't have had authority for a continuance?
Well, the statute says that the good cause request must be made in open court with either the prisoner or his attorney having the right to be present. So they would need someone there, if not Mr. Peeler, an attorney appointed on his behalf to make that motion, which they didn't do. But
when the state filed the charges, though, in the order it requested a warrant, and it also requested the court to appoint counsel for him, the state also knew at the time it filed its charge in Skagit County that he had Snohomish and King County matters pending. It also knew that there was a provision, and when you grant a continuance under such a provision, that it tolls 120 days. But I guess the point is there's nothing in the record that shows that they ever went to court at any time, knowing that he is in two other counties, and requested a continuance.
Yes, yes. They knew from the inception of the case, when the probable cause certification says that they knew that he was in Snohomish County Jail at the time that they filed these charges. There, you know, 9 months passed before Mr. Peeler found out about the warrant and made his request to be brought in, but the state had done nothing to move the case along in any way. In fact, waited for Mr. Peeler to again make another request to be brought to court before they took any action, seeming that they weren't planning on moving the case forward at all, which is hard to understand given the nature of the charges, that they don't seem to be, in fact, interested in moving the case along in any way.
And there's no indication in the record that when they did have him in Skagit and arraigned him, that they couldn't have set the trial date on the day of arraignment and forced the issue at that point. They clearly had 7 days left. Is that right?
That's correct. Yes, I agree with that. And just save my remaining few seconds for rebuttal. Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Eric Peterson from the Skagit County Prosecutor's Office, representing the state. In addressing the Judge Lau's concern, I think from the state's perspective, you have to look at the full language of 998-010 to evaluate whether or not Mr. Peeler's initial demand that he sent to Skagit County after he sent the demand to King County was effective, because he was not under a term of imprisonment in the Department of Corrections at the time that Skagit County received the notice that he's wanted to have his case resolved in Skagit County.
Let's set that issue aside for a moment, because there seems to be a problem that's not answered by the statute, and that is he did complete the request while he was at DOC and sent it off. You don't challenge that he complied with the statute with respect to at least the request. So what you're arguing, what the state's arguing, is that when you received it, is he should have been at DOC when you received it, and that the statute doesn't even apply. Let's set that aside for a moment. Did the state request a continuance? What did it do other than request an order of transport?
That's what we did. We were not disputing that we did something else to try to get the case moving along, because he was not available to us because he was going to be in King County.
Couldn't you have gotten a continuance from the trial court for good cause because the defendant was unavailable to be brought to Skagit County?
Well, it's interesting. If I haven't heard that suggestion that that's the way to deal with the statute, but to make a request for showing of good cause without the other party present and evaluate the circumstances, we could have done that. I'm not saying that can't be done.
The statute says all you need is the attorney there. And the court, when you issued your warrant and your certification filing charges, it says appoint an attorney to represent him. And the statute doesn't require that the defendant be present. It says the defendant's presence or his counsel for the continuance hearing.
There could be a situation where the defense is not required to be present. We recognize that. And there could be a way to apply the statute to say what the state has to do, anticipating the fact that the court rule exists on the back end to protect the defendant's time for trial and speedy trial rights, is to say, look, you have to do this to kind of toll the period for untried indictments under 998-010, and there's no provision providing for tolling underneath the statute. Now,
the statute is in substance a tolling provision, because if the court had granted a continuance for good cause, it would have tolled the 120 days. Do you agree or not?
It could have granted continuance for good cause.
Now, the question is, would good cause have been established? But the state did not ask for continuance. They didn't even try.
We didn't do that.
And
I recognize that we didn't do that. But I think you have to go back.
Is it the state's obligation to ensure a speedy trial under this statute?
No. The state's obligation is to comply with the terms of the statute. That's our position. And when the defendant is not available because he's not in a term of imprisonment in the Department of Corrections.
Of course he is.
I know
he's not in the jurisdiction of the department. He's simply not physically there. He's under a term of imprisonment. He's been sentenced. The department has taken custody of him for all intents and purposes. It's not quite like the federal system.
But he's
but
no.
It's pretty close.
But he's not in the facility. He's not in the facility where we would go to get him from to get him back to Skagit County. Now he's in another county dealing with a pretrial case in another county. We can't get him.
I-5. It's a big road. You could have come down and gotten him.
You could have talked to and interrupt the process for what King County is doing with their dealing with the case. And frankly, it's not as easy to get a defendant from another county when you have pretrial. We do order transports, but I hate to say they're disregarded sometimes.
I'm sympathetic, but Judge Lau's point is this. If you'd proceeded apace, knowing that this statute exists, gotten him an attorney, asked for a waiver of arraignment rather than go through this silly exercise, did you call King County? Did you talk to King County with regard to how they were going to proceed, the fact that you had a pending charge?
There's no record about what occurred with respect to where he was at. We were aware of the fact he was in King County. That's from the record.
Who has the burden of going forward here?
Well, a defendant is not available to us.
You should have made it. You didn't. You didn't do anything. You've admitted it. And the statute's written in absolute terms. You did not do anything.
But the statute requires certain provision that he's entered.
It doesn't say anything about tolling. You want us to rewrite the statute.
I think applying the full terms of the language of the statute would allow this court to say, look, he's brought to trial within the time provided under the requirements because he's no longer available to us from being in Department of Corrections. That's there within the language of the statute. He's not in the Department of Corrections. We can't get him from there. So what defendant is able to do in this particular case is take the fact he's at two different counties competing for them and use that to say, I get to choose which one I go to first because he made the request from King County to take care of that one first and then force us to not be able to get him to Skagit County to deal with the case under the untried indictment. The untried indictment doesn't automatically start the time for trial. It's, by its own language, a 120-day period by which we have to bring him to trial if he complies with the full terms of the statute. In the state's position, he does not comply with the full terms when he's not in the Department of Corrections serving a term of commitment. He's in King County pretrial evaluating, dealing with another case.
But he's also
and so he's no longer
serving a term of commitment. So it's a phrase, and you want to focus on where he physically is present. He's not unavailable to you. He's simply in another county.
Well, we get that situation where he's not unavailable. He's in another state. In another state, we can theoretically get him.
Take it to the judge and say, here. In fact, the actual statute says it's the trial court's duty to do this. Should have thrown it at the judge. Any judge.
From the state's perspective, this statute has been narrowly construed in the past because the notice that we have to get is effective the date that we receive the notice of where he's at for the untried indictment. And part of that has to be notice of in place of imprisonment. Well, when he tells us where he's at, he tells us in DOC. When he makes the request. But he knows he's got another case for King County. Got the transport order for there. He's going there. He's no longer in the place where he said he was going to be at the time he made the request for the untried disposition of the untried indictment. And when he got back to the Department of Corrections and made the request and was available, we got him there to deal with his case in a timely manner after we got that effective notice of untried indictment. So it's a defendant using, from the state's perspective, multiple cases in other counties to frustrate the fact that we're getting him to deal with our case.
This is one of not so many statutes that's been on the books since the 50s and hasn't been amended, and maybe it's time to amend it. If that phrase, penal or correctional institution, meant only the state prison system then, we've since interpreted in other statutes to include jails. If as you argue, he had to be there, well, they put in a tolling if he escapes. There's a tolling in the intrastate, but there isn't one in this statute. Now, that's a newer statute, so they knew how to do it. Maybe it's time to ask them to clarify it a little bit.
Well, and I guess, you know, when we look at the fact that time for trial rule was revised so that you can't get in a situation where a defendant has multiple cases pending in multiple counties, and there's a specific tolling provision, as Judge Lau noted, in the time for trial, but we don't even get to take the advantage of that time for trial provision when you have multiple cases in multiple counties, because we hadn't started a time for trial because he wasn't brought through to be arraigned on the initial charge.
Mr. Peterson, the whole point of this particular statute is the defendants who have multiple crimes in multiple jurisdictions. So this statute was designed specifically to ensure that the prosecutor shall bring the defendant to trial within 120 days. If you look at the comparable interstate detainer statute, the language is identical. And some of the cases there are helpful. But the other point, of course, is that you had him before speedy trial expired. And you could have set the trial date even then at the same day you arraigned him.
And then we get into the application of the time for trial rule because we
could, I know could it's harsh, but the state did nothing here.
But why haven't
I guess I look at it differently. We tried to get a defendant. We did our order of transport. We tried to get him from the place where he was supposed to be. When he said he was supposed to be there, he wasn't there. He was somewhere else. He was pretrial in King County.
Why haven't you argued that the court rule trumps the statute in this case because it is a time for trial rule?
But the statute's the statute, and I'm bound to comply. I mean, I'd love to make that argument because that would be helpful to me, but I have to acknowledge the statute's the way it is. But I think the court can read the statute in a manner which appropriately reflects the fact that we did get him there to move this case over to trial, and he wasn't where he was when he made that initial demand. So we would ask the court to affirm the convictions.
Thank you.
I just want to address one factual assumption that the state makes that is not supported by the record, which is that Mr. Peeler had initiated his own request of King County. There's no indication in the record he did that. King County had an order of transport that was that they had entered by a court on September 28th, which was days after he was brought into DOC's custody after his sentence.
We don't want to deal with that.
Okay. Well, he did not.
Deal with what we're doing up here, which is being helpful.
Okay. I'll try to be helpful.
No, that's always fun. Yeah. First of all, the statute's probably unconstitutional in purporting to deprive a court of jurisdiction, which I think is an interesting thing. But more importantly, that caused me to think of the fact that court rules trump statutes if they're procedural. And that is what this statute is. It is procedural. So why wouldn't we look to the procedural rules, which are far newer and far more frequently amended than this somewhat arcane statute purporting to deprive a court of jurisdiction, which it cannot do?
First, the premise that court rules trump statutes, of course, requires an attempt to harmonize statutes and court rules if there is a conflict.
Opposing counsel was arguing.
And this,
he didn't quite use the terms we're using, but that's what he's arguing. You got to put them all together, and it seems to me to make some sense.
This is, in fact, the statute addresses a different circumstance, which is a person who's held in custody who has no ability to initiate any action of his own. He obviously has no control over his placement in any way. And that the notion, and that the Morris court talked about, how, about a person. It's important for people who are in custody to be able to try to resolve cases that have been filed against them and not wait till the entire end of one sentence to have to then address a charge that happened 5 years ago. The statute has a different, an interest at heart, the intrastate movement of a person who needs to have some sort of way to press a prosecutor to initiate a trial against him who otherwise has no ability to make that control. So the statute is addressing a different circumstance with a longer period of time, with a provision for, with a provision for extending that time and with broad authority. But as the Supreme Court said in Morris, the terms need to be strictly complied with. The continuance request needs to be made in a timely manner, and it wasn't made here. And under this terms of the statute, the continuance request was not made. Mr. Peel was not brought into custody or into Skagit County's custody in time, and dismissal is required under the statute. And I would ask you to do that. And
if tolling applied, the date they picked, if the time he spent in King County's custody tolled 120 days, the scheduled court date would have been within the 120 days, which is what causes my curiosity about tolling.
That's an interesting question that I hadn't thought about. He was in King County for 2 months. He was ultimately tried later on, although the initial trial date was set for April. They're simply two parallel tracks dealing with addressing different issues. And this is the statute that is on point for these factual circumstances that applies here. Thank you.
Thank you to both of you.